How we doing, everybody? And welcome to Wisconsin Sports on the Go with Trage. I'm your host, Trage. It is Wednesday. A fantastic Wednesday in the great state of Wisconsin. But when I say fantastic, I come on with some troubling news coming out of the nationwide, let's go with restaurant game, right? We're not talking sports here for a second. We're talking restaurant game. I have just learned that Red Lobster is filing some bankruptcy right now. They are having some issues there financially, and right now they will be closing 50 locations throughout the United States of America. 50 locations, and two of them in the state of Wisconsin. The one in Wauwatosa and then La Crosse, Wisconsin, are both losing their Red Lobsters. You know what that means, folks? Lobster Fest. Lobster Fest is now screwed. And that's the one time a year that you go to Red Lobsters for Lobster Fest. I like me some Red Lobster. I always have. It's a I've always had a good experience at Red Lobster. I got to be honest. I've always had a good experience. But, you know, it was Lobster Fest. You had to get down there. That was the time to be at Red Lobster. And now I'm seeing they're closing two locations in Wisconsin there. Been to the one in La Crosse a lot. That was actually one of my favorite Red Lobsters to go to there, was in La Crosse. Now that it's closing, man, oh man, that just sucks. But that's the sucky news, right? That's the sucky news coming into today's show. I got the news feed. I was scrolling around on X this morning, formerly Twitter, on X there. I was scrolling around a little bit, and I came across that, and I was like, no way. So then I had to Google it, right? You got to go to Google then, because you can't trust everything that people are posting out there. So I had to go to Google then, and well, Google verified it for me and told me all those locations that are closing right now. So not great. Not great if you were a fan of Red Lobster. They are closing down some of their restaurants there. But hey, it's okay. It's okay. Because there's lots of good stuff happening in Wisconsin sports, right? There's lots of good stuff happening. So we got some good happening in the state of Wisconsin right now, you know, to balance it out. Good stuff from the Brewers, right? The Brewers got a win against the Pirates. We're going to be looking at that game today. I want to talk a little Packers. I joined this new group on Facebook. It's called the NFC North War is what it's called. And they allow kind of, you know, you're a Lions fan, you're a Vikings fan, a Bears fan, a Packer fan. You join this group and then it allows you to basically just go at people, right? You can post whatever you want to post and then people are going to jump in and be like, yeah, you're stupid. You're, you know, blah, 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 you know, back and forth. That's basically what it's all about. So I've seen a lot of interesting takes and everything like that coming out of that page there. So I want to talk a little bit of what I've been seeing on there and kind of what you guys think about that thing there. And also, I mean, like I said, Brewers, they're the big thing in the world of Wisconsin sports right now. So, you know, jumping around here, I want to look first at some of that NFC North talk, where they're at right now. So we look at, first off, I wanted to look at this one here, and this was an interesting one for me. It was teams with the best wide receiver combos in the league. Number one is the Bears right now with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, followed by the Rams with Pacheco Nacua and Cooper Kupp. And then you have Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins. Then you have the Houston Texans with Diggs, Collins, and Tank Dell. And then it goes down the list with the Browns, the Jets, the Dolphins, 49ers, Eagles, Seahawks, Chiefs, Titans. And then Buccaneers, Cowboys. The Bears? Right off the... I gotta be honest with you. I mean, the Bears are not the number one. If I was going wide receiver combos... Like, don't get me wrong. DJ Moore, pretty good wide receiver. Good wide receiver there. Keenan Allen, good wide receiver injury prone, but good wide receiver there. So I'm not going to say that neither one of those guys is a good wide receiver, but I look down this line here, and I mean, I look at the 49ers, Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, if Brandon Ayuk is still around there. Miami Dolphins with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And I mean, just down the list here of teams, you know, it really doesn't scream to me that those two guys are the best two in football. the best wide receiver combo right there. Because I can look over at a lot of different teams and say, hey, when you guys are healthy, when you guys have everything going right, like the Bengals. I mean, you look at the Bengals there with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. When both those guys are out there and they're healthy, that is a dynamic wide receiver core. One of the better ones in football there. Tough to beat what they got going on. And then, I mean, you look down the line there, and the Browns, Cooper, Judy, and Elijah Moore, the Jets in there with Wilson, Williams, and Alan Lazard. I mean, you look at the Jets, and you could, I would compare the Packers' wide receiver core to the Jets. I mean, you look at the Packers there, and Jaden Reed played a pretty darn good first year. Romeo Dobbs, Dontavian Wicks, Christian Watson when he's healthy. I just named off some pretty darn good wide receivers right there. And that's not even to mention guys like when Samori Toure did a little bit for him there, right? He was not a huge over-the-top boost for Green Bay, but, you know, just looking at some of the guys who weren't even the mainstays in that wide receiver core and still made an impact, right? And, Bo Melton, another guy, made a huge impact for Green Bay. So, you know, I don't know if I like that list. I kind of am interested to see what you guys think about that list, but I don't think the Bears two are the top two wide receivers or the best wide receiver combo or unit in the league. I really don't think so on that one there. So, I mean, that was just the first thing I saw there. Secondly, I saw the comparison of quarterbacks, right? They're talking about, you know, they had a big argument. Who's the number, you know, who's your top, you have your top four quarterbacks in the NFC North. Oh, well, you have four quarterbacks, right? Rank the top four. And a lot of people, Caleb Williams, then Jared Goff, then Jordan Love, then J.J. McCarthy coming in that four spot. This is what I want to know. How are Bears fans, I love me some Bears fans. I love me some Bears fans because they're a little out there sometimes, right? They're a little out there. I get it. You got the excitement now, right? You had the number one pick. You brought in this face of the franchise guy in Caleb Williams, and you truthfully believe that he is going to be the next great thing. The Browns thought that with Johnny Manziel. They thought they were bringing in the face, right? The guy who was going to run the league. They saw him in college. He was this dynamic dude and everything like that. I'm pretty sure if you look back in time at Ryan, I think it was Ryan Leaf's stats in college, he was equally, if not better, than Caleb Williams was in his last year. Put that in the comparison for you for a second. I'm not saying that Caleb Williams couldn't be something, right? I'm not saying he couldn't be something at some point. What I'm saying is that even in all these rankings that I'm seeing right now, I got to see it on the field first. I talked about it yesterday there. You got to have the right head coach in the system. You got to have the right offensive scheme. The playmakers got to make plays. You got to stay healthy. The offensive line has got to play well, right? Because if the offensive line is atrocious and you put Caleb Williams under distress in his first year in the NFL and he's getting bull rushed by guys like Nick Bosa, and, you know, I haven't, the schedule's come out here today. I haven't seen them yet, so I don't know what, you know, who's going to have who there. But what I mean is, you go against some pretty good pass rushers, right? Green Bay, they're going to be coming out with this more physical, we're going to get after you kind of defense there with Rashawn Gary and with Quay Walker and everything like that. So does that put him right to distress? Does he make good decisions then? You know, it's all the little intangibles. You can't judge this guy this early, right? I mean, you can judge the skill set 100%. 100% you can judge the skill set of the guy. You can judge what he read in college. You can judge everything like that. You can tell me everything that you saw in college that's going to make you believe Caleb Williams is going to be this great quarterback. And I would tell you, coming out of college, did everybody believe in Patrick Mahomes? No. But did a lot of people believe in Johnny Manziel? There was a decent crowd that believed in Johnny Manziel. Baker Mayfield, right? Zach Wilson. Maybe not so much Jet fans. They were confused by the pick. But what I mean is that I am all, you know, if Caleb Williams comes in and he's a good quarterback, good for the Bears. I hate the Bears, but good for the Bears, right? Good for the Bears. You found yourself a quarterback. What I'm saying is that I can't rank this guy as the number one quarterback in the NFC North until I see it on the field. when I see it work with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Roma Dunze, when I see that all come together and those guys, you know, DeAndre Swift in there too, those guys start to flow together. Because last year, I tell you what, a lot of people, including me, wrote off Jordan Love, right? He just didn't look good. Making bad decisions. The ball didn't look like it was coming out right. He was making bad reads. He was, you know, all the little things that he was doing wrong last season there. And he stuck it out. And about, you know, getting close to that midseason point, all of a sudden he flipped the switch, right? The switch flipped and he was like, okay, I got this. His teammates, everybody got a little bit healthier. Everybody got back. And all of a sudden, it all started to click together, right? As one unit. You can't, I mean, you could go out there and you could be the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, but you still got to have an offensive line. You still got to have a decent run game. You still got to have the ability to stand in the pocket and deliver a pass, right? You still got to have receivers that are healthy. So it's a lot of different things that are going to lead. It's the same thing with Jordan Love. It's the same thing with Jared Goff. All those guys are going to need all those little things to work out in their favor for them to put a run on in not just the regular season, but then getting into the playoffs, right? They're going to have that. So for us to say, hey, Jordan Love is the third best quarterback in the NFC North, but yeah, we saw what he could do in the NFL against some of the better teams last season, right? Ran the Lions, ran the Chiefs, the team that won the Super Bowl, beat the Cowboys in Dallas, a road game in the playoffs. This is a team, the youngest team in the league, goes down to Dallas and blows the doors off of them. And then they go to San Francisco and led for 58 of the 60 minutes in that game. And you're going to write this team off to saying that they have the third best quarterback in football, right? Made a bad decision down the stretch. I'm not going to say it won't, but you cannot tell me Caleb Williams will not make a bad decision in his first year, right? So that's where this list, these top four quarterback list that I keep seeing coming out of the NFC North, it's like, okay, until proven, I gotta see it. And if anything, I'd put Jared Goff above Caleb Williams and above Jordan Love. Like, if you were to ask me, hey, you know, truth be told, if you weren't a Packer fan, a little bit biased, right, who's your number one quarterback in the NFC North? And if you look through the stats and everything like that, you would, well, stats, Jordan Love's pretty good in the stat book. But if you were to say, hey, who would you put right now, experience and everything else, to be that top quarterback in the NFC North? I'd throw Jared Goff up top. And then I'd have Jordan Love. Then I'd have Caleb Williams. Then I'd have J.J. McCarthy. Just simply because that's where it just feels like it shakes out right now. Now, come regular season, could that list change? 100%. Come week two, come week four, week five, week 18, could that list change for me? 100% it could. Caleb Williams could come out and knock the doors off, go complete undefeated season, and walk the Bears to the Super Bowl. I mean, we're talking wild now, right? We're talking wild. But what I mean is that, you know, the list has that possibility to change. I just don't see it as people are seeing it right now. I really don't. I think it's a little bit wild when I see what they're talking about right now. So that's what I saw. And, you know, looking at the 2024 strength of schedules, just to top off the NFL talk for the day, when I was looking at this, the hardest schedule in the NFL coming up this next season will be the Cleveland Browns. They are sitting at a 547 right now, opponent win percentage above 500. The Ravens, they're second, followed by the Pittsburgh Steelers, then the Houston Texans, followed by the Green Bay Packers. They're coming in with a opponent win percentage at 526 right now. The Chicago Bears, this is what might help them down the stretch, and that is that opponent's win percentage right now, they're coming in at 467 right now. So, you know, I'm not going to say that the schedule won't differ just simply because teams could be better than what, you know, is on paper, what we, you know, are assuming out of them, right? We can see the Carolina Panthers have a good year. I don't foresee it happening because that's a dumpster fire of an organization, but we could see it, right? So you can't really judge it completely off of just strength of schedule right now. But what I'm saying is right now, sitting here, we have some teams that could benefit from where they lie there in strength of schedule. That is the Chicago Bears. And then you look up the list there, the Vikings are kind of in the middle of the pack right now. They're sitting at that looks like a 502 mark right now. Detroit Lions at 509. So, you know, the top two teams in the NFC North got a little bit of trouble there ahead of them. But you look down at the bottom there and you got the Chicago Bears. They might benefit from that. The Atlanta Falcons actually have a strength of their opponent win percentage is at 453. So the Atlanta Falcons with Kirk Cousins now, money, Kirk money down there in Atlanta could benefit a whole boat ton from playing some not so stellar teams here in this upcoming season. But with that, that's what I got. That's what I want to talk about NFL wise today. And you know, there, if you haven't get on there, it gets quite comical, you know, seeing some of these people and their conversation that they have, just a far-fetched things that they love to talk about. It is kind of comical at times. But with that, I got to get to the Brewers here. I got to get to the Brewers. But before we get there, I want to mention a few of the sponsors of the show here quick. First, Game Day Supply in Onalaska. Do you have a sports club or team? Are you looking for some sweet custom uniforms or apparel? Check out the awesome crew at Game Day Supply to help your team get the sweetest gear. Find them on Facebook at Game Day Supply or online at GameDaySupply.net. Also, your hometown team, Century 21 Gold Key Realty. Call Peggy, Sue, or Anna to find your dream home or if you're looking to sell. Find them on Facebook at your hometown team, Century 21 Gold Key Realty, or stop in and see them at their location in Marshfield. Also, Sporting Spine Clinic in Greenwood, Wisconsin. If you've been injured recently, whether at work, whether it was on the basketball court, the baseball field, the softball field, pushing the lawnmower, I don't know, you know, you get some crazy injuries out there sometimes, and you need some physical therapy, you got to get to Greenwood there. You got to get to Sporting Spine and see Chad. He'll get you right. He'll get you back to work, back out pushing that mower, back to the basketball court, baseball field, softball field, whatever it is. He'll get you back there feeling better than ever. Sporting Spine Clinic in Greenwood, Wisconsin. Marshfield Motor Speedways, located just 3 miles outside of Marshfield on County Road H. You got to get down there this summer. Tons of family fun for all ages. Great food, great drinks, great atmosphere, great racing. What else could you ask for a fantastic summer night? Find the schedule online or on Facebook. Just search Marshfield Motor Speedways. Otherwise, go to my Facebook page. I shared it there. Get on there, plan a date, get yourself down to the track. Tons of fun down there at the track this summer. Also, Sports Scene Sports Cards and Memorabilia, located in the Marshfield Mall in Marshfield, Wisconsin. You got to get there, see Al. He has everything you need from sporting cards, memorabilia, jerseys, model stock cars. He's got it all down there at Sports Scene in Marshfield, Wisconsin. And also Pittsfield Farm and Home Center. Summer is here, and you might need to get some power tools to build something. But you might be putting up a deck, right? You might be redoing your deck. You might be installing a brand new one. I don't know what you're doing around the house. You might need some power tools. You might need some flowers for that bed, some mulch, some dirt, whatever it is. You got to get down there to Pittsfield Farm and Home Center in Pittsfield, Wisconsin. They have everything you need. Everything you need for this upcoming summer. Get down there to the store, Pittsfield Farm and Home Center in Pittsfield, Wisconsin. Tell them Trajan sent you. Tell them that Trage from Wisconsin Sports on the Go with Trage sent you to the store there. Maybe it'll get you a discount. Ask for Alan. Maybe he can get you something. He can get you pointed in the right direction there. Maybe. I'm going to tell you maybe now. I don't know how it'll go. But with that, I want to get to the Brewers. I want to talk Brewers. Brewers got a big win last night there against them pesky Pirates. This is that shout out to the Brew Pod Between the Lines podcast right there with Caden. He told me that the Brewers were on this streak. They had to lose three here. And guess what? They broke that streak with this one. So good news. Good news, right, buddy? Good news there. Brewers get the win 4-3 in this one over the Pirates. It was another game. I don't know what it is, but the Brewers cannot chase starters, right? They had this game against the Pirates 4-0 there after that second inning. 4 runs in the bottom of the second for the Brewers. Now, when I say they can't chase starters, you're like, well, what do you mean? Look back to Sunday? Sunday with Miles Michaelis on the mound there against the Brewers. The Brewers jump out early to a lead. But then Miles Michaelis buckles down. He's able to get settled into the game, and they can't really get anything else pushed across later on. Exact same makeup in this game. Looking at the Pirates, Priester, he ended up going 6 innings. 9 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, that home run given up there to Sal Frelick. I mean, it's just two games now in eerily similar ways. The Brewers jumped out and jumped on them early, but weren't able to tack on runs as the game went along. Now they won the game, so I'm not going to say, you know, anything bad. Pitching was good. Everything was good on that end of it. The Brewers got the win. That's what matters most. What I'm saying is that the Brewers are still running into this situation where it is a struggle that, yes, they jump out to these early leads, and that's fantastic. I want to jump out to an early lead as much as possible, but I love to tack on runs, right? Give your bullpen something easy to work with, not these high leverage situations. You're going to have games like that. I'm not going to deny you're going to have games like that. But what I love is when, you know, early on this season, the Brewers were able to score runs early, but then it was like the middle innings. They were able to find runs. Then you get towards the end of the game, they were able to find runs. Now it's like, okay, we can push them across early, but then all of a sudden that starter buckles down and we aren't able to figure anything out. We aren't able to push across that run anymore. And then it gets later in the game. We aren't able to find a run. Now we're protecting, right? We're protecting a lead. At some point, you want the bats to break through and say, okay, hey, we got four runs for you in the second, but let's go get two more in the sixth, right? Because we put two guys on there, first and third, with nobody out. I'm going to score that guy. Some way, somehow, I'm going to figure out how to drive that run in there and not try to do too much. I think that's where a lot of these Brewers hitters are running into problems, is they're trying to do too much. You know, some of these guys who aren't even power guys, right? They're trying to hit they're trying to swing too freaking hard. They're trying to do so hard. I mean, that leads me to, I was going to talk about this later, but a big guy for that I've noticed is Jackson Chourl. Jackson Chourl is a prime example of he doesn't know how to change his swing when it comes to a different count, right? And I don't mean, you know, you have to take a lot off and you have to do this and you have to do that. But the biggest thing that I see with like Bryce Terang or even a guy like William Contreras or Yelich or some of your better hitters in the league, right, is when they get to that count, that 0-2 count, the 1-2 count, 2-2, whatever it is, they shorten up that swing. You know, Bryce Terang is one of the only guys that I still see around that chokes up on the bat, right? He chokes up on the bat with two strikes and just tries to put the ball in play. But, you know, those things, the little things that, you know, change hitters, change the approach, right? You go up there first pitch, you can swing away. Hack away, buddy. You swing as hard as you can, try to put that son of a gun. Swing until you hit Germantown, right? Just north of Milwaukee there. Hit a ball up north there. I'm trying to think now. I'm looking at where American Family Field is compared to Germantown. I don't know if that'd be a foul ball. I'm thinking that might be a foul ball there. I'm trying to think of locations right now. But you know what I mean. I'm good with that. If you come out of your shoes first pitch, it happens, right? I'd love for you to be able to make contact, but it happens. What I'm saying is that we see a lot of these guys, and Jackson Chourl is a prime example. When he gets late in the counts, that's when he starts to, I mean, still use that same approach. He's not trying to just poke the ball, right? William Contreras is like the number one guy that I watch that just kind of taps the ball, right? He doesn't. It's like a complete arm swing, and he just kind of sticks the bat out there and shoots it in the right. We know he's got power. We've seen the guy hit some pretty good and get a hold of some balls pretty hard. I mean, this guy is a pretty darn good hitter and is proven itself so far. But what I'm saying is that, you know, a lot of these other guys wish they would take a, you know, a little bit of a, let's watch this guy hit for a second, because see what he does with two strikes. He shortens up. He uses the arms. He just tries to poke the ball the other way and just shoot it through the hole, not trying to do too much. Now, if he got a 0-2 fastball right down the middle, that approach changes, right? That approach changes. But when you have something borderline, that's when you just got to stick the hands out there and float it, right? That's a big thing with Jackson Chourl that I'm seeing right now, is the approach does not change throughout his at-bats, right? It does not change. And I'm not saying that it should change, you know. I mean, you go up there and you have your scouting report of a guy, right? He's, you know, let's just say you're facing a guy who throws a lot of breaking balls, right? A lot of stuff outer half. He's going to try to beat you with a slider on the outer half, right? You're going to want to look to poke it, right? You're going to want to look to poke it the other way. That's understandable. The approach to that does not change. The mechanics of it might, though, right? Choking up on the barrel, trying to just slap the ball out there. Those are the little things that I think the Brewers kind of get away from. 0-2, they're still trying to put the ball in the parking lot instead of choking up and trying to do the little things. Early on this season, it was a lot of base hits that got Brewers runs. It wasn't the long ball. It wasn't the long ball that was doing it. Now it's like, okay, we want a rally to start. We got to hit a long ball to do it. That's how we're going to score runs. That will work at times, right? But this lineup, I mean, there's guys in this lineup. I'm not going to say there aren't guys in this lineup that can't hit home runs, right? I mean, all these guys, we have seen them hit a home run at this point. Oliver Dunn and everybody else. We've seen these guys hit home runs. But what I'm saying is that you look at this lineup, you say to yourself, these aren't, you know, everyday power hitters, right? Rhys Hoskins, power hitter. Gary Sanchez, that's what he's known for, power hitter, right? And, you know, you're going to have guys like that in the lineup, but I looked up and down the lineup, and it's like Terang. He's not my everyday power hitter. He's more of a, I'm going to shoot it, you know, just over the heads kind of guy. And Sal Frelick, same thing there. Christian Yelich, he's a little bit of both, right? Same with William Contreras, a little bit of both. But 9 times out of 10, those guys are trying to plug gaps, right? They're trying to find holes in the infield there and shoot a ball through. Adamas, he's a power hitter. Right? He tries, that's his big thing, is a power hit kind of guy. Do I wish sometimes he would just poke the ball the other way? Yes, I do, because I think that's the only thing that sometimes he lapses on, is poking the ball the other way. He gets out of his sorts, and he's trying to just unload on a baseball, poke it the other way for a base hit. Simple thing, but he tries to get ahead of, he gets ahead of it, he's trying to pull everything. Outside pitch doesn't work so well. And I mean, Jake Bowers, power hitter, but we know this guy can hit the baseball in all facets, right? So, I mean, that's just, and I mean, there's more guys in the lineup. I can go through them all right now. But what I'm saying is the Brewers aren't built to be this big home run hitting team. They are built to have some guys that hit home runs, right? And will run into the occasional one. But for the most part, this is a team that's going to get on. They're going to put pressure on you on the base paths. And that's what they did early on this year. That's what led to the success of what's led to now. But now it's like we're trying to change the game up again. We're trying to change our philosophy at the plate. I don't know why. Early on, it was all about small ball, getting on, stealing bases, the small ball aspect. Now it's like, okay, now we're changing it up. We want to, if we're going to score runs here, we got to hit that bomb, right? And I don't know if that'll work. I don't know if that'll work. You know, if it does, it does. I'll eat my words on it, but I don't know if that'll work. They got to be able to manufacture runs in other ways, right? And they did in this game here. A couple runs there off a couple hits, but I like the spotty scoring throughout a game where, you know, you put up some crooked numbers throughout the game. You're not going to every game. Don't twist my words here. You're not going to every game. But what I'm saying is that, you know, the Brewers have gotten away from the ability to push across runs throughout games right now. So hopefully that starts to tick up there right now. I mean, the runner batting with runners in scoring position, that's something that you want to see continuously get better. And especially in first and third or bases loaded situations with less or one out, you got to be able to push across runs. You got to be able to find runs in those situations. So some of the little things that I've seen as of late here, out of the Brewers. But I want to look at the box for this game here against the Pirates, because Brewers got the win, a big win, a much-needed win against the Pirates there to get them off that little schneid that they had there and try to extend that lead in the NL Central. So 4-3 was the final. Terang, he went 2-for-4 in this game, got that average back up to 300. William Contreras, 1-for-4 does not do him justice, because, I mean, this guy, 352 right now, he has his average, but 1-for-4, he had a couple of hard hit balls outside of that, that just, you know, hitting them right at guys, right? Hitting them right at guys. Yelich, he goes 2-for-4. He's got that average at 359. He is swinging a hot stick right now, coming back from the IL. Adamas, he goes 1-for-4. Bowers 0-for-3. We saw Ortiz go 1-for-4. Sal Frelick was all over the place in this game. Couple sliding catches out there in center field, and also that big two-run home run that got the scoring started for the Brewers in this one. So good stuff there out of Sal. We saw Oliver Dunn come up with a single in this game, and so did Jackson Chourio in this game here. So good stuff there all the way around. 2 RBIs for Frelick in this one, 1 for Terang, and 1 for Yelich in this game here. So good stuff there all the way around. Joe Ross pitched a pretty good game outside of one pitch. One pitch that, I mean, it happens, right? It's going to happen. Joe Ross doesn't give up a lot of home runs, but it's like the Brewers thing. Brewers starters thing is like, I want to give up a home run and just try to beat the next guy, right? Freddie seems susceptible to the home run ball. Colin Ray, Tobias Myers, all of them, not Robert Gasser yet, right? Gasser throws gas. He ain't giving up bombs, right? But Joe Ross did give up that bomb in this one here. Two earned runs, two hits, six strikeouts. A solid day. A solid day from Joe Ross, a solid game. You can't complain about that outing for Joe Ross. That was fantastic. Good stuff there. Brian Hudson continues to impress. Two innings pitch, three strikeouts, got that ERA down to 0.74. This guy is just, I mean, he's pitching on another level. And looking at his mechanics, I mean, just seeing how far that he strides off the mound coming at you, it is very hard to hit this guy. It is very surprising that the Brewers were able to get him, and now seeing him pitching and seeing him go, this is a guy who is could be a very dominant reliever for a while, and it is crazy. I mean, just for two innings. I mean, this is a long relief guy right here who is pitching fantastic baseball. So good stuff there out of Hudson. We saw Paguero. He went for an inning there and two strikeouts. Good stuff out of Paguero. And then Trevor McGill continues to do Trevor McGill things outside of a little long ball late in that one, right? A little long ball late in that one by Connor Joe. Other than that, I mean, two strikeouts, only that one hit given up. Did get the save for the Brewers. Came in like a racehorse and then kind of stumbled a little bit, right? Kind of stumbled, and it was like, I don't know if he's going to win this one, but we had the faith, right? We had the faith. Trevor McGill gets the Brewers out of it, and the Brewers end up with the win here. Runners in scoring position this game, like I said, it's been a little bit of a problem. 3-for-13 in this game here. 7 left on base in this game, so not great on that front, but a win's a win, right? A win's a win. Not much to complain about when you win a baseball game, right? You can't complain too much there. And the Brewers, they're going to wrap up the series here. That'll be coming up today here. A 12-10 start for that one. 12-10 start. We're going to see the man, the myth, the legend, the rookie phenom. We're going to call him the rookie phenom, right? He's better than Paul Skeens. I'm just kidding. I don't want Pirate fans to get all upset with me right now. But Robert Gasser, he's going to get a start for the Brewers in this one, facing off with Perez. For the Pirates, Perez 1-2 with a 3.60 ERA. Gasser 1-0 with that 0 ERA right now. Brewers, they've got that little bit of experience against Perez there. Sanchez has got the most, 19 at-bats, 1 home run, 158 average. And then we have Yelich, 8 at-bats, 125. Contreras, 500 average and 2 at-bats. Adames, 13 at-bats, 231 there. So the Brewers, little experience against Perez, they're a lefty, and we're looking at the Pirates, no experience against Gasser. So flying in blind against the gas man, you don't want any of that smoke. This guy is, I mean, if he goes anywhere like his first start there, we can expect a good one there coming out of that one. So looking at the standings right now, I just wanted to look where everything was holding right now. The Cubs have lost 2 in a row, so they are sitting a game and a half back of the Brewers now there. In the Central, they lost to the Braves there 7-0. Atlanta was able to pull that one off. Jameson Taillon gets lit up by them Bravies down there. Good stuff. Chris Sale has been pitching on another level since joining Atlanta. He's 6-1 with a 2.54 ERA there. So, I mean, holy cazola, the Cubbies got some problems down there in Atlanta, and the Brewers, you're just hoping for a series win today and to be able to build up on that lead, right? Build up on that lead in the NL Central there. But other Brewer news, I just saw, you know, the update coming out of yesterday. Rhys Hoskins was put on the 10-day IL with a left hamstring strain there. So thank goodness it's not the knee again, right? Thank goodness. Hopefully the hamstring heals up fast and he's all good to go. In the transaction, Owen Miller was recalled from AAA there. So on his way back up to Milwaukee. So good stuff there. Not good stuff, but good to see Owen Miller back on his way up. Hopefully he kind of sticks up there. And, you know, I've always, Owen Miller, good guy, good hitter. Hopefully he sticks around there on the big league roster for a little while here. So good stuff there with that. But I wanted to look at the last component I had for the show today. Last little segment. So I was sticking with the Brewers. I saw a list. MLB Network came out with their top 5 catchers in all of baseball right now. And I was confused because the list has Will Smith as the number one catcher in all of baseball right now, followed by William Contreras, then Salvador Perez, then Patrick Bailey from the Giants, and then Adley Rutschman from the Orioles. So I was, you know, kind of, I wanted to look into it a little bit. I wanted to look into it a little bit and see where all these guys were hitting right now. So you look at the Dodgers, you look at Will Smith right now, and, you know, this series that he had against the Padres wasn't fantastic there. But you look at him right now, 310 average there at the moment that the Dodgers are playing. So 310 average there for Will Smith. And then you look down the line here. I mean, you look at even a guy from Kansas City there in Salvador Perez. Salvador Perez right now, he's hitting 327 on this young season right now. 327. We talked about Contreras, 350. How does Will Smith end up above those guys? That's what I want to know. How does Will Smith end up above those guys? Unless if they're taking in defensive metrics, but even defensive metrics right now, Contreras has played defensively pretty darn well this year. So I don't know. I don't know where they're looking. All I know is that list is a whole lot of BS right now, and William Contreras is the best catcher in all of baseball at this very moment. That's all I know. That's all I know, and I'll tell anybody that. I'll tell you what. I'll tell anybody that right now. I mean, that's just where I'm at with that. I mean, I saw that list. I just wanted to point that out. Interesting. MLB Network, sometimes I see the list that they come out with, and it's like, who wrote this? Who did this? Who needs their job taken away? That's what I want to know. Who needs their job taken away? So, I mean, with that, that's about all I got. That's about all I got for the day. Talked about the Packers, you know, little NFC North talk there. Talked about the Brewers there. I mean, we had to get to the Brewers, right? Coming up today here, 12:10 start there for the Brewers and the Pirates. Final game in this series here. And then the Brewers will, I believe they have a day off. I believe they have a day off on Thursday before they will have their weekend set there with the Houston Astros. Yes, they'll have that day off before they go on the road there for Houston and Miami there. So good stuff there coming out of the Brewers. Hopefully pick up a series win here coming up today. But with that, this has been Wisconsin Sports on the Go with Trage. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. But until I talk to you guys again tomorrow, deuces.
Yeah, my Lord, watch me sway. Darkness falls and we all pray, hoping for the light of day. Down to the river I have held the devil's hand, felt the weight of my own sin, burdened by the heart of man. Down to the river, down to the river.